Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
From the blackest corners of your mind, they call, pulling you deep into shadow, twisting your senses, keeping you from sleep. It's time to face your darkest fears. This is Tales to Terrify. Good evening, children of the night, and welcome. Our Secret Society's Flash Fiction Contest kicks off next week. Hopefully the swirling shadows have imparted some inspiration to get the ideas flowing. Keep your eye on our social media. We'll announce the opening of our submissions portal there. For tonight, though, we've got a pair of tales for you as we explore the fringes beyond life and death, and prepare for a demonic showdown. Our first story for the evening comes from Tiffany Morris. Tiffany Morris is a Mi'kmaq writer of speculative fiction and poetry from Chibooktook, Nova Scotia. She is the author of the Elgin-nominated horror poetry collection, Elegies of Rotting Stars, from Nictitating Books. Her work has appeared in Nightmare, Dark Matter, and Apex Magazine, among others. Find her on Twitter at @TiffMorris or at tiffmorris.com. Children of the night, join me for Tiffany Morris's We Have Made a Home Beyond Death, first published in Moonflowers and Nightshade, a sapphic horror anthology.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Deep in the thistle-knit field, we've abandoned our stories in favor of life. Moving beyond the place where we were left to die, our blood catches and recatches on thorns that bite into our strange flesh as we make our way back into the field where we now live our unlife. In the last few moments I remember, the forest was shivering, breathing green and thick with daylight. A car, It must have been a car. A monster of shrieking metal and vomiting exhaust that clipped us off our path and sent us down a ravine. Our bodies tumbled hard in watercolor blurs of clothes, limbs, and blood, landing broken in a heap, in moss and gnarled, tangled roots. I was flung from my bike at a high speed. Jagged boulders kissed my skin as I fell, scraped and bloodied, along the stones. Against my ribs there was a cracking, sharp pain, and a twisted something that stabbed through my chest. Then red. Then nothing but the blinking back awake into a new and dull daylight. Renee's head was split at the back, her blood an elegant scarf soaking through the back of her jacket. Our bikes must have become twisted metal sculptures, tossed in the tempest of gravity, and lost somewhere on our wayward path. Would we ever find them again? Would we even need to? I awakened in the red, nothing, duller daylight sometime after we landed. We stood and walked out of our bodies that were shed like snakeskin on the forest floor. I looked and saw Renee standing beside her flesh, perfect in her ghostly glow, radiant and beautiful. And she saw me. Without a word, we crawled back into our bodies, like coming inside from the cold and getting under blankets. A soft homecoming. "We're so lost," I said as I stood. I felt nothing as my broken leg popped back into the joint. "I shouldn't be able to stand, should I?" "I can walk," she said, stepping over to where I stood. Her smile was radiant and strange, a long scrape at the edge of her bruised mouth. The gray light surged, then dimmed. The forest was unnaturally quiet. "Let's look for somewhere to go." Renee turned her head, listening for the sounds that might help us navigate. A brook, a waterfall, or a certain type of bird. I don't remember where we were going in the first place. I tried to think, but the tumbled images were only of our falling and landing. Do you remember? "I don't remember much," Renee said. "Just us falling, and who I am, who you are, that I love you." There was no breeze to catch her dark hair. She reached her hand into mine, and we walked into our strange oblivion together. A hard, wet thump cracked against bone as my love bludgeoned the man in the skull. "This one should do just fine," she said. The man gurgled blood, moaning from between shattered teeth. "Hush," I grinned down at him. "This won't take long." The man groaned louder. I wasn't sure if anyone could hear us. "Hurry," I urged Renee. Being discovered would be worse than true nothingness. We would not be captured. We would not be made oddities. We would not be exorcised from this earth. Another hard crack followed a wet thump. Unintelligible whimpering and moaning called out from his busted mouth. "One more," I said. Renee swung the heavy hammer back down. The final violent thud put an end to the man's whimpering, as his body convulsed and twitched, and finally went still. "Should we look through his stuff?" she asked. "You do it. I've got to get to work on him." We had stumbled upon his tent in a clearing not too far from the house. He had been alone, with wood chopped, stacked, and ready to be set to fire. There was a large hiking pack, too. None of this was of use to us, except the knives and axe, and, crucially, what he carries on him. For every man is a harvest of flesh. A knowing was present in my hands as I prepared. I felt like I must have hunted in my previous life. The knives were surgeon steady in my hands as I did the work of gutting. I knew that we must harvest as soon as death happened in order to use the skin, in order to eat the organs. We would also leave some for rot, in order to feast again and stay in our flesh. We make maggot bread, so we ourselves will not be devoured. We are somewhere between ectoplasm and moldering, fleshy beings wearing the promise of death like a wedding veil. Steam rose from the body as blood poured out, his skin gleaming like fish scales in the light. The air must have been cool, though I hadn't noticed any frost stiffening the mud and leaves, the branches of trees crinkling and withering as they shed their fullness and beauty. Skeletal and lovely like my love and me. Renee slung the man's axe over her shoulder and beckoned me to follow her home. I tossed his bones in the lake and followed her soundless footsteps. We have made a home beyond death. A cottage at the edge of the woods, before the fields of no place, an endless fog that returns you back to the forest. When we found it, delirium thrashed into silence, soft against the daylight that weaved through the trees outside of time. We were Lazarus perfect in our becoming, spring-like, bringing forth flower garlands twisted from our uncertain, revenant hands. Renee loved to wear them as we wandered through the woods, finding our kin in mushrooms and lichen blooming on the things that die, the writhing beetle and snake wriggling through wood wet with rot. Every day, Renee tended a fire that licked the gloom in our yard. I wandered outside of our home to feel nighttime once again. Our small house is beyond the reach of time, obscured in fog, where the quick flame of foxes screeches their lament in blurred visions, ducking and bowing in the thickets. It is only ever the gray of rainy daylight here. I did not have a measure of time in this place, so I wandered in the dark and did not sleep. Time had passed since the camper died, that was true, though I had no way to know how much. My wife and I wasted and grew, waning flesh like the moon, bloating rot, then blooming renewed. Through the stretching shadows of the forest, I walked, moving from the deep grisaille of gray on gray in my home, wandering further into the charcoal and blue and velvet black, relieved of the coarse, dull nullity of our home beyond the field and thicket. I was near the site of the camper's death when I saw a distant glow of flashlights dancing. Voices carried in the deep night, brushing over my cold, dead flesh. Moving closer, I saw three human silhouettes, one aiming a camera at another glowing brightly in its light. Sightings of strange phenomena in this area. 2 years ago, Henri Boudreau disappeared while camping. GPS located his almost dead cell phone in this area, buried in the mud. His remains were never found. A man's voice glared at me in the dark. My EMF meter's catching something, a higher voice yelled. Excitement sharp as a gunshot cracked through the air. Fuck. Fuck. I realized what this meant. More people would surely come here. People would wander and seek the poor man's bones. People will always look for ghosts. The three silhouettes scrambled together and exclaimed happily, reading the meter. Strange phenomena have been reported here since before Boudreau's disappearance, the man continued into the camera. Among them are odd sounds, such as women screaming. Those are the foxes, you fool. And shadowy apparitions of women appearing and disappearing into mist. Hot rage and cold doom rose bilious in me. We were not ghosts. We refused to become ghosts and stayed stubbornly in this place, never to disappear. We were staying together no matter what. These people had to leave and never come back. You guys, the high voice said. You guys, the reading is spiking. It's super intense right now. Look at how the red bar keeps increasing, this graph. I tripped backwards to get away from them. As I ran, their voices faded into the growing dark. Renee didn't panic when I told her what I'd seen, and it made me feel a little calmer, quieter, more still. Clouds of gray shifted around our feet as I stood next to her. She always made me feel safe. Her warmth and strength and big body, all a place of home. Her deep calm in everything was so different from my feeling of smallness, of nervousness. Don't worry, she said. She poked at a log in the fire that fell, a bright column collapsing and crackled. We can always use more bodies. Their flesh will keep us real. How many more of them will come? I insisted. If we kill them, I mean. More people will come anyway, but if we kill them, the police will investigate. Villagers, wanderers, ghost hunters, all manner of people. I know, Meredith, she said. It's okay. We'll just have to make this place safer. But I don't know how we'll do that. A pause. Do you mean like if we fortify this place? There are things you don't know about it here, she said. There are things that live here that don't live anywhere else. Things that I speak to in their own language. The language of unliving and unreal things. I considered this for a moment, staring into the dancing flames once again. Is that how you knew? That we needed the flesh? The bread? Renee nodded and pulled me close to her. I tried to ignore the worry that pulsated in my unliving chest, my unbeating heart. The threat of an unknowable eternity. I did not wander again into the night and stayed in the house instead, staring at the patterns in the warped wooden ceiling beams. This was a fine small place to be, a solid place beyond weather and will and want. A promise that was not heaven, but was still life beyond life. I heard, for the first time, the sound of my wife speaking to the creatures in the fog. They screeched a chorus like women screaming. Like foxes did, I knew, in the before time. These are beings of air that guard the boundaries of life and death, Renee explained, keeping pristine the places where the two meet. Why do they let us be here, then? I asked, and she just shrugged. They needed new caretakers, she said. People who will help keep humans away from the area. They saw us die and led us here. I tried to remember the walk back, but my memories are only of the fall. Bruised and bleeding flesh on stone that hardened to meet us and claim us. What if it's a trap? I asked her. That had occurred to me. And I was like, well, what if it isn't? I chewed the bread of death and swallowed hard, not knowing a good answer. It snowed when Renee left, the creatures leading her out into the woods. I had taught her the business of gutting, the ways to stretch skin and extract organs, and to pull flesh from bone. Renee's boot prints led through into the forest's edge, where I could hear the mix of guardian screams and human screams, flashbangs of fear electric in the dark, the desire to live from the doomed humans as palpable as pulp. I didn't know what the future held, but I knew that when my wife arrived, dragging their flesh in ribbons behind her, that we would feast, and she would be beautiful in the dim light casting blue-gray on the snow, far from the prying predatory eyes that watch the dark, for people like us.
That was Tiffany Morris's We Have Made a Home Beyond Death, as read by Amy Paunessa. Amy Paunessa has been the producer and host of The Bloodlust, a horror movie review podcast, since 2014. She has narrated stories for various other podcasts, including Knife Point Horror and the Alexandria Archives. She's thrilled to read for Tales to Terrify, especially because she credits the podcast with reigniting her love of horror fiction. You can contact Amy through her website, thebloodlust.net. Thank you, Amy.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Our second tale tonight comes from Dana Vickerson. Dana Vickerson can be found in the concrete confines of Dallas, though she's most comfortable deep in the woods. When not designing buildings, writing stories, or painting weird 3D-printed sculptures, Dana can be found analyzing horror movies with her husband or making elaborate paper dolls for her daughters. She's an active member of the HWA and SFWA, and her short fiction appears in Zooscape, Reckoning, Dark Matter Magazine, and many other places. You can still find her on Twitter at DM Vickerson. Listen with me, children of the night, to Dana Vickerson's Red Thread Binding, a Tales to Terrify original.
Today I will kill my demon. I swallow the burning bile that rises up my throat, but it won't stay down. My hands shake as I grab each item and set off through the sprawling house. The silence follows me, but I stay alert for the sound of her. She's so easy to wake these days. My bare feet stick to the bowed floorboards, but I do not stop. I need to get in place before she finds me. In my arms I carry everything I need, feeling the weight of each item, new weapons mixed with old comforts. There's a faint creak as I open the door to the room underneath the stairs, and I halt. Can she hear me? I listen for chittering and scraping as I pull the door closed. I take a deep breath and prepare to make my final stand. In my last apartment, the tiny one where I wrote out lockdown, there was no space to hide. It was just me and her in an endless loop of isolation. In my withdrawal from the world, she thrived. She sat on the couch next to me, my fear and her strength growing in equal measure, as we watched bodies being loaded into cold trailers, parks turned into field hospitals. I tried not to look at her. Not turn my head and see the rot just beneath her icy skin, the decay just beyond her cracked teeth. White knuckles digging into the couch cushions, I would will myself to look at anything but her. But eventually my eyes found hers, because I knew she could make it all go away. Her gaunt face twisted into an unnatural smile, and then her jaw unhinged, stretching down to her concave chest. The sight was so horrible, but so familiar. She slid next to me, her grave-scented breath on my cheeks, my lips, and I let her in. Every single time. The rush obliterated all the worry and loneliness. Like sex and exercise and the best meal I've ever had. It sent sparks dancing across my neurons. My body tingled for hours, filled up, and afterward she would sink back into the shadows, satiated. Until the next time. I barely squeeze into the room underneath the stairs, even though there's only the table and rug inside. I peek through the doorframe, ears open to her movements. For one damaged heartbeat, I think she's left me, and I'm struck with a needling pain that I don't want to face. The ticking sound of her long nails raking the plaster announces her, and my shoulders pull inward, my bones suddenly wanting to form a cage to keep her out. Like that could work. The click, click, click grows rapid, and my heart matches the beat. I cannot go through this again. The last strands of my strength are frayed like old rope, and my sanity hangs, waiting for the snap. I pull my knees into my chest, breathing softly in the darkness. One by one, I place each item on the small table. Mirror, hairbrush, rag, pill bottle, red thread, candle, book. Absently, I push my rotting teeth with my tongue and remind myself why I'm doing this. Why I have to banish her. The lighter makes a faint click, and I flinch at the sound. The warm candlelight wavers as the air under the door shifts. She's here. The little mirror rests gently against the wall, and I watch my hollow face say the affirmations that I have whispered so many times. I am not my demon. My demon does not hold power over me. I will not let her take over. My eyes are sunken and my skin is brittle. Even in the forgiving light, I look decades older than I am. All those years ago, when my demon first came to me, I didn't recognize her for what she was. But now that I see my thin frame and bony fingers, I understand. I wasn't always alone with my demon. Once there was a man. We sat at an elegant table, him at ease in his tux, me in an uncomfortable bridesmaid dress. I couldn't focus on his words, only the fabric digging into my waist, the way the dresses draped smoothly over the other bridesmaids, the way everyone else in the room seemed to belong. They drank and danced while I seethed. The beautiful man asked me to dance too, but my limbs would not move. I was heavy with jealousy. Why had I never felt the way others did? Comfortable, happy, accepted. The man stroked my arm and I wanted to look at him, wanted to let him pull me into his arms and spin me on the dance floor, wanted to give him a piece of my pain. Let him carry it for a bit. But it belonged to someone else. I looked for her in the shadows, longed for her, even as the beautiful man grew frustrated, stepped away, left me at the table. I could not reach for him. I belonged to her. She slid toward me from across the room, pointed toes just off the floor, mouth an open black smear. Her too tall frame towering above the other guests. A ghost in gossamer. Eyes only for me. My jaw clenched as she grew closer. The venue was too public, but I didn't care. I needed her. She sat down next to me and wrapped her ice-cold fingers through mine. Maybe this was a mistake, I thought. I should call back the beautiful man. I should not reach for my demon like this, and in such a public place. I tried to ignore her, but the more I did, the harder she squeezed. Cold sweat beaded at my temple, and I gave in. Her smile was so wide it pulled the skin around her dead eyes. The teeth that were left in her blackened gums fell out one by one, clinking onto the expensive china. My stomach lurched, but I knew it was far from over. She pressed her lips to my ear and told me what I needed to hear. Bile rose in my throat. Her dislocated jaw hung against the dirty white dress she'd worn for the occasion. The stench of death forced itself into my nostrils, and instead of running away, I leaned in, letting everything else fall away. Her bones pressed into my arms as I pulled her close. Once she was in me, her purrs echoed inside of my skull. It wasn't a feeling I could hold for long, this unity, and I knew the purge was soon to follow. She'd come ripping out, pulling the deep ache in my chest with her, until I was calm, numb, healed. I didn't know the venue, didn't know where I could hide until she was done with me. People stared as I fumbled through the crowd, my movements controlled by the demon within. When I finally found a room where I could be alone, I let the wave of her crash through me until I floated on languid seas. The evidence was written all over me, the cost of her company, and it was only when she receded that I saw how much I'd paid. The beautiful man stood in front of me with sad eyes and asked me to choose. I really wanted to choose him. I pull my brassy, brittle hair from the brush and hold it over the lighter. The space smells acrid as the hair catches. Somewhere outside the door, my demon shrieks. She rattles the hinges. Her fists pummel the thick wood, and she screams for me to let her in. Into this room. Into me. It's time. I take the red thread and begin the bind. Round and round my neck I wrap until I feel the cord bite into my skin. It's tight, but I can breathe. I shove the cloth into my mouth and wind the thread up my neck and over my lips. Tighter and tighter, taking shallow breaths through my nose. All the while, I hold my reflection's gaze. Tall and lean, just like my demon. Tiny red veins spider across the dull ivory of my eyes. I bite down on the cloth so hard I feel an ache inside each tooth. A monster stares back, but it's not my demon. It's me. The room feels too large and too small, like a funhouse, distorted and grotesque. My heart rate has not slowed. It pounds in my ears, making me feel like I'm leagues underwater, drowning. If I don't complete the ritual, she will come for me. And if I let her in, she'll never let go. My shaking hands fumble through the rest of the items, and the pill bottle topples silently to the floor. I pick up the leather-bound book, and the pages fall open to the one I need. The one I've read hundreds of times. The one that tells me how to expel her. The one that has never worked. I hesitate. The day I met my demon, I was lost in the deep forest of loneliness only a child can know. I sat in the middle school cafeteria hoping someone would set their tray down next to mine, but the girls avoided my heavy body like it was a catching disease, and the boys looked right through me. I ate until I could no longer feel the hollow cave in my chest, trying to melt into the cinder block walls. When I felt like I might rupture, not just from the food but from the wave of emotion it was keeping at bay, I dumped my tray and spent the next class hiding in the bathroom. Hot tears washed down my plump cheeks, and she was there, staring at me in the mirror. She was so tall, so lean, with something so familiar in her eyes. She whispered what I needed to hear, kept me company, and reached inside that vast space in my chest and promised to make it whole. Chasing that feeling, I met her there every day. Other places too. Random store bathrooms, the woods, anywhere I could be alone. I found her crawling towards me from the dark folds of layered shadows, asking to be let in. A pain eater. A friend. It became our ritual. A stressful test, a fight with my parents. A crush failing again to notice me. The wave built until I thought I would burst. And there she was. My release valve. With my demon's help, I transformed not just my mind, but my body. People accepted me. My life became what I'd always hoped, even though I knew her honeyed words contained a potent venom. She's been devouring me piece by piece ever since. Her banging rattles the house, shaking dust loose from between the old wooden boards. The candle flickers, but I read on silently. I am not my demon. My demon does not hold power over me. I will not let her take over. The pounding stops. Outside the door, there are no shrieks, no pleading voices to break my resolve. The thread makes my face numb, the feeling moving down my body, making my hands tingle. It can't be over. It would never be that easy. My ears are still filled with a roaring ocean, my vision blurry. If she's moving outside the room, I can't hear her over the noise in my head. The longing to be finally alone. Except I cannot imagine life without her. The binding feels too tight, cutting into my skin. The little closet is so small. What if I can't do it? What if it's all too much? My reflection is sallow in the candlelight. The orange hues making the thread look like bloody slashes across my mouth. I think about a world where it's just me, where I no longer need her, if I can survive. I am not my demon. My demon does not hold power over me. I will not let her. Rotten breath warms the back of my neck, and I wish I could say I'm disappointed. I wanted so badly to believe that this could work. I gathered the supplies. I bought the book. I said the words. I did want it, didn't I? This time was supposed to be different. She was supposed to shriek and bang and scratch and plead, but the door would hold. The spell would hold. I would hold. But how many times have I tried? Hundreds? Thousands? A lifetime of fresh starts and tomorrows all lined up in a row. She always wins, always finds her way back inside, collects the pieces of my soul and builds the jagged puzzle of me. She just needs this last piece, and now she's here. I feel her hot breath and smell the putrid stench of her, and it's delicious. I wonder why I ever thought words and rituals could take her away. There is only one way to free my demon. Her eyes glint red in the darkness just over my left shoulder. Her nails rake up my arms and rest on my throat, stroking the divots where the thread has pulled my skin tight. She does not smile. She hates what I've done to myself. But she loves the taste of pain. Her jaw cracks as the tendons snap free, and I shut my eyes. I don't want to see the end of us, the last time. She pushes closer, her emaciated body pressing into mine, her nails digging into the hollows of my collarbones. She wants me to look. She needs me to. I shake my head and take shallow breaths through my nose, her stench making my empty stomach heave like waves in a hurricane. The room spins and the rag in my mouth soaks up the last bit of moisture. I don't know if the roar is my heartbeat or her want, but it pulses through my body. Her teeth crack and fall to the floor, making muffled sounds on the rug. Like some monstrous two-headed beast, we're intertwined. Her fingers spidering up my face to pull my eyelids open. She bears down on me with everything she has, nails finding purchase in the soft skin of my eyelids. She holds them open so I can't look away, and my vision is blurred, tunneled to this one moment. Just her and me. It's more horrible and wonderful than ever before. She is so hungry. She knows it's now or never. The thing she's always wanted. I take one last look at her face before her skin blisters and cracks. Her face, my face, there is no difference. Red fissures crack across her skin, like a shattered mirror, and beads of blood ooze down her neck and onto my shoulders. It's hot and smells like dead things left too long in a wet forest. The feral musk fills the room. I want to scream, but my mouth is still bound. Underneath her skin is a rippling current of blood, ready to take me away. She is coming undone with want, more fervent than I've ever seen her. My pain is a feast, and she is gorging herself. Her mouth whispers in my ear, and I close my eyes. I no longer need to see, so she lets my eyelids flutter shut. The darkness is a comfort, like a net that draws me down into the depths. She can't find her way in through my mouth, so she claws at my nose, my eyes, anywhere she can squeeze inside. I let her. My body vibrates with her triumph, and I fall over, my face resting on the carpet inches from the pill bottle. It's empty, of course. I took the pills before I started the bind. Could never truly imagine a life without her. With all that pain. They've dissolved in my system now. So even if she could get them out of me, if she could make me rip off the thread and free myself, what's done is done. I feel her panic as the realization sets in. The darkness is coming for us both, from the dim spaces in the corners of the room, ready to lay claim on what's hers. But she won't let me go. She tears at the binding, trying to free me, to get me up off the carpet, make me throw up one last time. All I can do is lay there, foam and tears slick on my face. It's far too late. She can't feed off something that isn't there. A different wave works its way from my toes to the top of my head, pulling me up and away. It's not like her. Not the violent crashing along the shoreline of my bones. It's the gentle current of a spring stream. And I float away on it, leaving her with my ruined body. She stays inside until it grows stiff. I watch as her spidery form crawls out through the broken binding of my mouth. Her form hunched and angry and so small. She no longer looks like me. She is other. Unhosted. Untethered. A horrible howl erupts from deep inside my demon's body, and I know it's over. That she is no longer my demon. She stands over my body, ragged head tilted to one side. And it dawns on me that maybe she was as tied to me as I was to her. Maybe she wasn't able to let me go, too. I watch as the demon, who wore my skin and was a part of me and all of me, stalks off into the darkness to look for her next home. And I'm finally free.
That was Dana Vickerson's Red Thread Binding, as read by Nicole Doolin. Nicole is a writer and voice actor. She performs for a number of popular and award-winning podcasts, such as the No Sleep Podcast, Farfetched Fables, and Tales to Terrify. To learn more about Nicole, visit her website at NicoleDoolin.com. Thank you, Nicole. Well, children of the night, the hour is late, and we've run out of tales to tell. For now. Tales to Terrify is made possible by the tremendous generosity of our supporters on Patreon and PayPal. Incredible fans like Lessel Baxter, Paul Belcher, Amanda Carrillo, Amanda Gottfried, and Orion D. Higra, whose generous support helps keep the lights on and flickering ominously. Not a supporter already? Head over to patreon.com/tales to terrify, where you'll find all kinds of perks, like ad-free episodes, bonus content, and one-of-a-kind collectibles and merch packs. Every dollar goes back into this show to make it as horrific as possible, and we appreciate it so much. Want another way to support the show that doesn't cost a cent? Head over to Podchaser, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating or review. You'll not only put an unnaturally wide smile on our faces, but help new listeners discover our terrifying tales, too. Why not share your love of the show out in the world with some Tales to Terrify merch? TalesToTerrify.com/merch will take you to our TeePublic store, where we've got a great collection of creepy custom and curated designs, so you can show those around you just how twisted you truly are. Tales to Terrify is produced by Seth Williams, Meredith Morgenstern, Andrew Gibson, Crystal Hammond, Spencer Disparti, and myself, Drew Sebastini, with original theme by Nebulous Entertainment. Tales to Terrify is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives License. Join us again next week as we explore dark spaces with more Tales to Terrify.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.